This is part one of 365 Days of 221B, written by Anarion, read by Dreamweave Believer. This part contains days 1 through 20. Enjoy!
Day 1. Warrior. Sherlock had been at war with himself and with the world since he can remember. Maids, scared by his questions. Teachers, annoyed by his intelligence. His parents wanted a daughter and not another strange little boy. Other children hated him before he opened his mouth. The only light in the darkness of his childhood had been his brother, who comforted Sherlock when he cried because no one liked him. He stopped crying when he was 5, a circumstance that upset Mycroft more than he ever liked to admit to himself. Who bandaged wounds with words and careful touches, and sometimes actual bandages. Who explained the world to him every time it did not make sense, constantly. In his teens, he hated himself. Hated his body, the tall stature with slender limbs that seemed to go on forever and never do what he wanted them to. Hated his life. Hated everyone. He tried to calm the war inside with drugs. Learned to adorn himself with the armor of disdain and to defend himself with words sharp as blade. Then he met John Watson. And though his days were still filled with bullets, brawls, fights, arguments, the worst of them with John, for the first time in his life, Sherlock felt at peace. Life with John was the best of battles. Day 2. An Aspect of Beauty. Tell me what you like about your body. The voice drifts over from the tub. He looks into the mirror, gazing at himself thoughtfully. His skin seems very pale in the harsh fluorescent light. He never thought about his body in ways of beauty. Lifting his head, he locks eyes with the other man, seeking encouragement in the warm smile. The first thing he notices are the love bites. The first thing other people notice is the scar. It still looks red and angry. They never know how to react to it. They either pity him, "Oh, John," or look away. Sherlock was the first to actually like it. First for its symbolic meaning, but mostly because it's interesting. John isn't sure how he feels about it. It's not a sign of pride, like his RAMC tattoo, or the scar on his leg where he was wounded by a knife and still got his patient to safety. He doesn't hate it either, though. Scars aren't bad. They are one form of memory, a part of you. He smiles at Sherlock, knowing that he already read everything John wanted to tell him. Sometimes I like what I see in the mirror. Sometimes I don't. But when you look at me like that, I feel like I have the world's most perfect body. Day 3. Over the Hills. In some aspects, Sherlock seems to be the perfect travel companion. He speaks several languages, is brilliant, and can adapt to almost every situation he finds himself in. In reality, traveling with Sherlock is a nightmare. He insults people in several languages, uses his brain to get himself in all kinds of trouble, and most of the time chooses not to adapt to any given situation. John is really sick of apologizing to people in languages he doesn't even speak. Sherlock also gets something close to whiny every time he has to leave London. John, however, loves to travel. He does not speak a lot of languages, but he can communicate with people in other countries nonetheless. He just uses his smile, his hands, and, if he has to, also his feet. He takes trouble and chaos stoically, except when caused by Sherlock, and manages to get help from people in the most remote areas. So tonight, after Sherlock repeatedly complained about the bed, the weather, and the population in general, John decides that this will be the last journey he drags Sherlock into. "You know, for someone who wanted to be a pirate, you have a very small sense of adventure. I merely found all the treasures I could be looking for." John smiled. "So basically, I am your bounty?" Day 4, Candle. "Ciao, Molly. Do you like the wedding reception?"
"Ah, grazie.
Come? How I first meet them?" "I met Sherlock a long time ago. He helped me with certain, conflict I had with the police. Yes, I might have strayed away from the righteous path now and then. After that, he came in from time to time. Always alone, seldom eating. Mostly just staring at my customers and scaring the hell out of them. I got used to reassuring them by telling them that he was an artist searching for inspiration and offering a free drink. And then, one cold and dark night, he came in with that short blonde fellow. I might have overdone it a little that evening, but I knew immediately that this one was special. Sherlock never brought a date before. I think John might not have been aware that it was a date, but I gave him a subtle hint. They come here often now. They have their own table, and Sherlock is so much more agreeable since he is with John. Okay, right, there was that time when they emptied the place in 5 minutes with an epic shouting match, and that time I had to pretend that the bathroom was flooded because, well, anyway, I always like to think that my place is where they started." Day 5, The Woes of Wooing. Sherlock never understood the thing with the flowers. Watching Lestrade buy them for his wife, stupid she was cheating on him again, he gave the topic a few seconds of thought. Why would a selection of cut-off plant ends symbolize someone's love? You can enjoy the fragrance and colors for a short period of time and then watch them wither and die. How is that for symbolism? He turned his attention back to the case. When he finally... Yes, for someone this clever, it took him an embarrassingly long time to figure it out. Realized that he wanted John for more than a friend, he suddenly remembered that day. He felt strange, and very much out of his depths, when he carried his present up to John, up the stairs of 221B. He felt strange, and very much out of his depths, and stupid, when John, without even blinking in surprise, shook his head. No. No. No, I'm glad we're finally on the same page here, but flowers aren't you. You want to woo me? Yes, he said woo me. Come up with your own way. Sherlock's answering grin would have scared away any normal person, but John just smiled back, because what Sherlock would come up with would be exciting, crazy, possibly illegal, and so much better than any bouquet.
Day 6, Anticipation. Sherlock had been fidgeting in his seat for the last 20 minutes of the flight, snarling at the stewardess and nearly reducing the cabin crew manager to tears when he came to her rescue. He asked the cab driver to run a red light on several occasions and offered him money if he went faster than allowed. He needed to get home, to see, to touch, to confirm, so badly he was almost shaking. He started to holler John's name the moment he was in, and took the stairs in such a haste he almost flew through the door as soon as John opened it. He ripped his coat off, stormed into the kitchen, and nearly flung himself at his microscope. The contented sigh that escaped his lips earned him a huffed-out laugh from John.
"If you could teach that thing to make you come, you wouldn't need me at all."
John sounded fairly amused, so Sherlock didn't waste time raising his head.
"True, wanker. Luckily you still need me to do that."
He lost track of the blood sample under his lens when John stepped closer and wrapped his arms around him and kissed his neck before starting to suck a mark on it. And there went his concentration, another case unsolved in favor of following John to bed.
Day 7, the perfect incentive. John tried to refuse. He really did. He didn't really care what other men did, but he wasn't. Oh no, even if Sherlock asked nicely, said, "Please," and, "It's for a case, John." John H. Watson was not to be persuaded. Except, of course, he was. It took Sherlock just short of 40 minutes before he came up with the perfect incentive.
"If you're not going to do it, I will."
The man re-emerging 10 minutes later was still clearly Sherlock, but Lord, did his face look different with makeup. Kohl turning his eyes more cat-like, a smudge of color making his lips look even more lush, and his cheekbones. It took all that John had not to just grab his partner and take him right there on the kitchen table, or the floor, or really any horizontal surface. Vertical might be fine as well. So yes, John knew instantly that he was not going to let Sherlock walk into a gay bar like that, be there a serial killer or not. This, by implication, meant that he himself was doing it. Had he known that Sherlock's reaction to John wearing makeup was going to be equally enthusiastic, he wouldn't have bothered trying to refuse, because that night was the night Sherlock pounded him so hard they broke the bed.
Day 8, the stars within your grasp. Sherlock has always loved heights. He could basically climb before he could walk, and broke his right arm trying to prove his theory on artificial wings before he could write. Mycroft worried about him falling down from one of the various rooftops constantly, and for 2 summers the most often heard sentence on the estate was, "Sherlock Holmes, get down from there right now!" John, on the other hand, did not like heights as a child. He was the sensible one. So his sister got to do all the climbing and falling down while he worried on the ground, and treated her injuries later on. Sherlock had never an opinion on the height of a girlfriend, mostly because he never had a girlfriend or interest in having one. John, on the other hand, preferred his girlfriends to be shorter than him, not an easy task if you're not a giant yourself. So when his taste in women suddenly changed to tall, slender, and dark-haired, he finally got the hints his heart was trying to get through to his brain. Sherlock still likes heights. And last night he finally managed to convince John that being on rooftops isn't that bad, especially not when you end up coming twice, though with tiles leaving funnies impressions on your backside.
Day 9, I was on hold until I met you.
Do you believe in fate? I'm a scientist, John.
Yeah, but don't you sometimes get the feeling we were, I don't know, made for each other?
Sherlock fell silent for a long time.
Not like that, but I had a feeling of recognition on some level immediately after we met. Would it make it easier or harder for you if it were fate?
Make what easier or harder?
Thinking about my past. Would you think that there was nothing you could have done because we were meant to meet on that day? Or would you feel worse thinking that you could have made my life easier had we met earlier? I just hate to think about all that time, all those years you were alone. I wish I could have been there since your childhood, to be your friend, your protector. I don't live in the past, John. I live now. As far as fate goes, I think this is where I am supposed to be. All those years between my birth and meeting you were just a placeholder. You don't feel like these years were wasted? None of my experiences were a waste, since they made me who I am, who I needed to be to meet you. Those years made me strong enough to wait for someone brave.
Day 10, an error in judgment. This is ridiculous. We're in India. Isn't it supposed to be warm in India? According to the weather report, this isn't unusual. We're high up in the Himalayas. The weather is bound to be quite different from the lowlands. This room doesn't have heating, and the blankets are as damp as my clothes because of the humidity, or fog, or whatever that is outside. Are you going to be like that all the time? This is like working with Lestrade. You'll be no help to me at all. You'll just have to get me warm before we go meeting with the suspect. Do I? And right there, the moment turned into one of those where Sherlock Holmes was wrong. Because while he was convinced that he'd just kiss John and suck him off, 10 minutes tops, before they could focus on his work again, John was having none of that. Well, he was having the kisses and the blowjob, but not of the one foot out the door rushed with the clothes still on my boyfriend has other things on his mind kind. Sherlock realized he was mistaken the moment his lover bit his lip, tried to reevaluate, and stopped caring as soon as warm hands were pushed into his pants. In the end, they stayed in their, now warm and dry, bed long enough to not only miss their appointment, but also dinner and breakfast.
Day 11. Green Thumb. Do you ever wonder why there are no plants in 221B? Sherlock does not really care for plants. Boring. And John thinks his life is complicated enough already with keeping his flatmate alive. When he was younger, John actively enjoyed growing plants and gardening. The only gardening Sherlock ever did was to plant a cannabis plantation in his mother's garden, just because. He tried to start cultivating poisonous plants, but John put his foot down on that one. The only time there were plants in the flat, it came as a surprise to everyone. One evening, coming home from Angelo's, they found 35 plants standing in the living room. John turned around and glared at Sherlock. "What? Why are you looking at me?" "Why am I looking at you?" "Because every time something like this happens, it's your fault." It wasn't this time, though. A florist was just now trying to figure out where his merchandise had gone. "Oh, look. A Drosera capensis." Sherlock pointed to the little green thing sitting on the windowsill right next to the jar with the deformed murine fetus in formaldehyde. "Don't ask." "A what?" "A carnivorous plant. Can I..." "No, Sherlock. We're going to give them back first thing tomorrow." "John." "No, we don't keep poisonous plants in the flat, and certainly none that bite."
Day 12. Bad days. There are a lot of things Sherlock Holmes is not. A lot of words which you would not apply to him. Polite,
diplomatic, conform, delicate. John will agree to all, but the last one. But that's just because he has seen sides of Sherlock no one else ever has. You've definitely never seen him come home and just stop in the doorframe because he feels something is up with John. He will stay there and watch John until he has deduced his mood and what it is John needs right now. Because John has bad days, dark days, when he loses himself. Sometimes John wants to be left alone. Then Sherlock quietly goes into the kitchen and works on one of his experiments. Sometimes he doesn't want to be alone, but doesn't want to talk either. Then Sherlock plays the violin for him. And sometimes, when John is captured by the darkness, Sherlock walks over to him and pulls him into his arms, just holding him silently until the fierce pressure of John's embrace eases and he leans into Sherlock. Sherlock still won't speak. Instead, he will weave his hand into John's hair and press his lips to his forehead, his whole body whispering, "I am here for you." They will stay like this until John finds his way back. Day 13, An Appreciation of Efforts. Sherlock is one of the most terrible patients John has ever had. And that includes the recently widowed lady who always tried to get into his pants, much to the amusement of the nurses, who said that he should be proud to be so popular with all generations. The old man who farted and giggled into his beard whenever he saw John. The young man who broke John's wrist because he tried to take away his mobile on the way to the A&E because he had a knife in his leg. And the neighbor's cat that bit him more often than he could count. Sherlock with a cold is whiny, demanding, and sounds like he's about to drop dead at any second. Sherlock with congestion? Oh boy. That just makes him curious and results in a series of experiments. We will not speak on it any further. You would assume that being such a terrible patient, he's also a bad nurse. He is, but he tries so hard that John never wishes him to be different in that regard. He tries, therefore John can forgive him for endless cups of cold tea, for disappearing while looking for painkillers, and even that one time when he flooded the bathroom because he forgot that he was running John a bath. Day 14, Flip the Switch. In the beginning, relationships need sorting out. One has to figure out what the other likes, what he doesn't like, who sleeps on which side of the bed, what you can tolerate and what you can't, and sexual preferences. With two men, that includes the topic of roles. When Sherlock and John started being intimate, John let Sherlock top because he assumed Sherlock, always wanting to be in control, would prefer that. John liked taking the receiving part, but he also liked to give that pleasure to his partners, and the need to be surrounded by Sherlock's heat and tightness grew stronger. So when Sherlock stopped going down on him and growled, "Fuck me, John," John did not hesitate. He did not inquire if Sherlock was sure. He just flipped him over and went to work, so to speak. It turned out that Sherlock, who, despite all his verbosity, never was very vocal during sex, became very much so when being fucked. He started wailing, a high-pitched sound you'd never associate with a voice that deep. John came so hard and fast, he almost blacked out. After that, they went with what the mood dictated, sometimes even switching roles in between. What they both love most, though, when Sherlock tops from the bottom. Yes, they had to soundproof the bedroom. Day 15. Head over heels. Literally.
"John, I'm bored. What do you want me to do about it?"
"Go shopping with me."
"Excuse me?" Who are you, and what happened to Sherlock? Go shopping? You never go and buy milk. What do you want to go shopping for?
Heels.
Heels?
Yes.
What? You can walk in heels?
Of course.
Why can you walk in heels?
Case.
And why do you want to buy heels now?
I want to work on a new disguise. It took Sherlock some persuading, but in the end, John agreed to go with him. In exchange, Sherlock told him about the case. Not that he wouldn't have done that anyway. You know him. He likes to show off. John followed Sherlock into a store that specialized in men's heels and watched him try on different kinds of shoes. They all looked strange to him on his lover in his suit. Sherlock seemed to come to the same conclusion because he went and changed his whole outfit for the next heels. What happened after that, neither man had seen coming. What happened was that John dragged Sherlock into the changing cubicle, snogged him breathless, and then got them both off by sucking the other man vigorously. The shop owner made them buy the whole outfit and promise never to come back. Day 16. Child's Play. 3 years in the relationship, and John had never seen Sherlock with a baby. Or child of any age, for that matter. So when Molly asked them to her daughter's first birthday party, he was curious as hell. The afternoon progressed much as you can imagine, though, to be fair, Sherlock was very accommodating. He complimented Molly on her daughter's beauty, after John kicked him in the shin repeatedly, and refrained from offending the other guests. He held the baby for a few minutes. Of course, he knew that John wanted to see him holding a child. He just didn't understand why. Until she began to cry, and then to spit on his silk shirt. He handed her back and walked over to John.
You don't want children.
No, I don't.
Then why was it important for you to see me with a baby?
I don't know. I just wanted to see.
To be sure?
Sure of what?
That I cannot handle children, and therefore you won't have any if you stay with me.
If? No, Sherlock, that's not what this is about. It's really not. I just wanted to see.
Good, because this day just reassured me in staying childless and unmarried. John thought about the ring he brought and grinned to himself.
We'll see about you staying a bachelor.
Day 17. Child's Play. Reverse. John has always been good with children. He likes them and takes them seriously, no matter what age, and therefore they adore him. Sherlock never understood what John saw in him, and always tried to be prepared for the day when John would realize that this life wasn't for him after all. When John's strange obsession with Sherlock holding a baby began, yes, Sherlock noticed pretty much from the start, it's not hard to miss when your partner suddenly starts handing babies in your general direction from left, right, and center, he was convinced that this was the beginning of the end. So John coming up to him the day after the fiasco with Molly's daughter and asking if he had a minute? Not really a surprise. Sherlock decided to spare them both the awkwardness of John explaining that it had been fun. He really liked Sherlock, but he had realized he wanted children after all, and maybe they could stay friends? What came as a surprise was turning around and seeing the huge grin on John's face. What came as a surprise was John taking his hand and pulling a little box out of his pocket.
John, what are you doing?
I'm going to ask you to marry me, genius.
What? Why?
Why? Because I love you, you Burke.
Day 18, a rose by any other name. Will your arrogance grace us with his presence? Sometimes, when John is really annoyed with Sherlock, he calls him names. Nothing rude, just to highlight some of Sherlock's less appealing character traits. He never does it when he's genuinely angry, therefore Sherlock knows what he is dealing with, and knows accordingly that he should dial it down. Not that he often does, of course, but there's no real reason to worry. When John is genuinely angry, he goes completely silent. This has only happened twice so far, and Sherlock immediately knew that he crossed one line too many. The silence went on for 3 days the first time, and it scared Sherlock half to death. Scared him even more the second time, but he knew that nothing helped. He had to sit it out until John came back, ready to talk, and asked, "Tea?" Then Sherlock go ahead and grovel and apologize. Today, John is just annoyed. Sherlock was bored, and he might have been a little irksome, but now Lestrade is here. There is a new case, and John has just called him into the living room. Everything will be fine now. John knows it too, because his eyes sparkle a little as he bows before Sherlock and indicates the door. After you, Your Brilliance. Day 19. An interesting advantage. Sherlock doesn't get them. Never has. Not once in his lifetime. John, mere human that he is, has them now and then. It wouldn't be a great deal if Sherlock wasn't incredibly annoyed by it. The first time it happened, he was intrigued. He got that look in his eyes that never bodes well and always worries John. The, "Oh, you are an experiment, let me dissect you," look. Sherlock was convinced that he would be able to find a quick remedy. He didn't. The next time it happened, they were standing, and kneeling in Sherlock's case, around a body. No one reacted except for Sherlock, whose head snapped around. "John?"
"What?"
"Stop it. Stop
what at?
I can't, idiot."
"I cannot work like that. It's distracting. Go away." You can imagine how things progressed from there.
The solution presented itself by accident. John got them while they were having sex. Sherlock was delighted by the unusual feeling. John was amused by the idea that his boyfriend was probably the only person on Earth who got turned on by hiccups. Now the only thing John had to fear when he got them was Sherlock immediately dragging him somewhere to have sex, which was not really something to fear, rather something to look forward to. Also the fact that an orgasm gets rid of John's hiccups? A nice bonus. Day 20. Not really about coffee.
"John, how do you feel about biting?"
I presume we're talking about the general use of my dentition here."
"Please, don't play stupid. I meant biting as part of sexual intercourse."
"Of course you did. Do we have to talk about this here? Surely you noticed that Greg just now almost choked on his coffee while he pretended not to hear anything you say?"
"Don't exaggerate. He merely spluttered."
"That distinction is so comforting.
To bring us back to the topic, I thought it would be one of those things deemed polite to inquire about before applying them in situ."
"Inquire? Oh, you mean like you asked about videotaping me while I shagged your brains out? See, this is what it sounds like when Lestrade chokes on his coffee. And asking you about it would have made you aware, and therefore had an influence on your performance." "My performance. That's a nice way to put it.
You enjoyed the idea when I showed the film to you afterwards.
Yeah, luckily for you I did.
And judging from your bodily reactions to our conversation, I'm certain that biting will increase the intensity of your orgasm by 30%. And with that, he whooshed out past a shocked Lestrade, sitting at his desk, still trying to catch his breath.
So this has been part one of 365 days of 221B. 20 days down, 345 to go. I hope you enjoyed, and I should have the next part up within the next 2 weeks.